What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to Double M Live. You guys already know what it is, man. It's where the sports and the urban culture collide. We got another great episode here on season three. Mike Nice, what's going on, my brother?
Marv, I'm here to tell you right now, season three ain't missing.
It ain't missing,
season
bro.
Season three is not missing. We just been chugging along. Like I've been saying all along, our foot's been on the gas pedal. We've been pushing, making this happen. Not only Double M happening, but shout out to Josh and Soul Brothers Groove. Yes, oh, sir. Man, shout out to Sundays with Sayonara and Kai. Like, yo, Double M to the moon.
What did Sam say? Double M to the moon, baby.
Shout out to the EP, Sam, Double M to the moon. So, hey, man, like I said, foot on the gas pedal. We here.
When you said, I'm here to tell you, I thought you were going to pull the Stephen A. I'm here to tell you right now, we don't care. We don't care.
Shout out to Stephen A with that, because that clip is hilarious. I love watching that.
Yeah, that's the best one. If you ever just want to shut some conversation down, pull up that Stephen A.
I promise you, that little clip right there has popped up in the group chat many a times.
For sure. Yo, man, we got a great episode here. Shout out to everyone tuning in. You guys already know what to do. Like, comment, subscribe. Just last week, we had A'Sherrod Blakely come through and talk some Celtics. But this week, we got another special guest, something special here going on. And remember, all week, all month, and throughout these shows, we always want to represent, you know, the women in our lives and the women that we look up to. It is Women's History Month.
Sure is.
The day we are recording right now, it is actually Women's International Day. So shout out to all the women out there, of course. And we are going to continue to do our parts as two black men to continue to give out flowers as we can. But Mike Nice, man, you already know what we do on this show, brother. What is on the playlist today?
Like I said, Double M season three ain't missing. You know, Marv already talked about it a little bit. We got another special show happening. And with the special show and it being Women History Month and all that good stuff for sure, we have a guest joining, a special guest. And let me tell you a little bit about this guest here. She is a social media producer and digital host with NBC 10 Boston and NECN. And she is also the co-host of the A-List podcast with our guy who recently joined us, A'Sherrod Blakely. We got to introduce none other than Kwani A. Lunis.
We still don't got the mix board with the fans going crazy.
Audience.
It's coming soon. Coming soon.
We need that. We need that.
Before we went live, my mom just texted me, hi, and I'm like, okay, hi. And she said, happy Women's Day. So I guess we're really in the spirit of International Women's Day.
All month long.
Definitely all in the spirit. How are you, Kwani? How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a Monday. It's a new week, new opportunities. I'm excited. How are y'all doing?
Blessed. Happy to be here, always. Yes. Yeah, that's how I take it all the time.
We here, we're alive, we're striving. We thank you once again for being here with us, Kwani. And I think the first question we got to ask is, you know, right now we're currently in a pandemic, you know?
Are we?
We're getting out of it, though.
I mean, it's looking a little different. You couldn't tell in some states. We still in a panoramic.
Right.
We still in this panoramic going on right now. And it's definitely shook up how people's done work, how business has been doing, especially for you as a sports journalist. How has things changed for you in this past year and how you get to do your job?
So the biggest transition I actually had to make during the pandemic was leaving sports and moving over to the news side. And with news, it's technically like an umbrella, so sports kind of falls under it. So I'm not necessarily far removed from sports, but I actually accepted the role that I'm in now. I think right as it was maybe a few weeks before we went into like the formal lockdown. And then I ended up transitioning, having to train over the internet with all these new coworkers. It was definitely a hard transition in that sense. But then finding innovative ways to interview people, like you guys are using StreamYard. Our job has also used StreamYard and other websites that allowed us to interview people from across the world. And if anything, I would say it makes things a little bit easier because before the pandemic, you would try to, let's say you try to talk to LeBron and he lives in LA. that was maybe undoable at the time, but now you're like, okay, well, we have Zoom. We have all of these resources. You don't really have an excuse of I can't come to Boston because I can literally find you on the internet and have a conversation. So it was definitely hard at the beginning, but I think a lot of companies and mine specifically, we found ways to be innovative and still keep the creativity flowing despite all the restrictions that we've had.
Right. I think that's something Mike and I just hit us random. It was like, wait, we don't have to have people come meet us at a certain location or we can just use the power of the internet. What we've been doing this whole time, what have we been thinking about this whole time? And so, yeah, definitely finding creative ways to do these jobs has been helpful.
It's been great. Like StreamYard has been amazing to use. You know, it's made everything go so smoothly with all some of the shows and the interviews we want to do. But let's continue to dive in. We want to know the history of Kwani A. Lunis. Where are you from? Your upbringing, everything that from day one that brought you up in this point. Tell us, tell the people watching and listening some more about you.
Okay, so I'll try not to go too long with this answer, but
take all the time you need. All the time you need.
So I'm originally from New Jersey. A lot of people get surprised because I think at this point people think I'm from Boston, but I'm not. Right. So born and raised in New Jersey, went to school there, and by high school, I kind of just applied to a bunch of schools, and Boston ended up being the one that stuck, Boston College specifically. I went there for 4 years. I managed the women's basketball team when I was at BC. And I think that's what kind of opened the door for me realizing that, one, I loved sports and basketball specifically, but I wanted to turn that into some kind of long-term career, not necessarily knowing what that meant at the time. And I remember reaching out to the director of communications at the time and saying to her, like, hey, I want to work in sports, so I don't know what that means. Can you help me out? And she happened to know the producer at WEEI, which is local sports radio station here. And I was able to, and that was my first foot in the door. I interned for one of the shows there. And I think, you know, since then I interned there, interned at NESN, the primary like Bruins and Red Sox broadcast. And then out of college, I worked at WBZ, which is the CBS affiliate here in Boston as well. And all of those experiences prepared me to be qualified because, you know, everyone wants you to get experience, but a lot of times it's hard to get experience because, you know, no one wants to hire. But thankfully, I had those three things on my resume that I think helped me be a little qualified when it, you know, paper wise, at least to work at what was Comcast Sportsnet New England at the time is now NBC Sports Boston. I started there as a production assistant, worked my way up from PA to a digital PA to eventually a social media coordinator role that they opened up. And then fast forward to literally a year ago when I applied for the social media producer role at NBC 10, which, you know, at the time I wasn't really sure, like, you know, do I want to transition to news? It's going to be, you know, what is that going to be like? But it ended up being the right opportunity at the right time because, as you all know, sports shut down for a while and you know, we weren't even sure if we're going to ever get sports back again. So it was an opportunity for me to kind of expand my skill set and learn a little bit more about just covering basketball because we're the NBC Sports Boston is the broadcast partner for the Celtics. So a lot of what I did was covering the Celtics and, you know, occasionally we'd cover the Bruins and always covering the Patriots, but, you know, primarily it was basketball. And so for me to kind of transition out of my comfort zone into something that was scary, but cool, you know, I've been able to expand, I think, with news and do a little bit more, but thankfully, we all work for the same, we work in the same building when we were in person, NBC Sports Boston and NBC 10. So eventually when we get back, we'll all be together. But like, I'm still on emails with all those people. Like, it's not like I necessarily left the job and didn't have contact with them. I'm still kind of connected to that. So hopefully that's a long story short of like how I got to that right now. But there was definitely a lot of moments along the way.
One thing I need to know, because you talk about this love for basketball, does that mean that you were a little bit of a baller back in the day? Like,
I try not to brag. Okay, look, I don't think I was great, but I know I had a really good jump shot. I remember this kid in my class is Zaki. I don't know if he ever watches, but he used to brag about my jump shot because people wouldn't believe me. Like, I'm 5'2", and they're like, there's no way you're good at basketball, nothing. But I would play with my dad like every weekend. You know, I got to a point where if I had actually been serious, I feel like I could have been like an Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, not like as good as him, but I mean like, you know, people count you out because you're short, but you're actually decent at the game. That's what I mean. Right. I don't know if I'll be as good as he is, but I definitely didn't take it as seriously as I probably should have. But my playing against your dad is always going to make you better. Like,
You know, you're never going to go easy, right?
Right. So I will say I had a good jump shot, but then it kind of all fell off.
That's fine. I remember I actually seen you. The first time I seen you was with Quick Slants with Tommy Curran and such like that. And then to see where you are right now is really dope. I want to take it back to New Jersey though. You said, you know, love of basketball. What was your team back then? Were you a Nets fan? Did you follow the Jets? How was it?
Awkward question. So for basketball specifically, the one thing I feel bad about is that I wasn't a Nets fan, because now I'm like, dang, your home state had a basketball team and nobody supported it, and that's why they went to Brooklyn. So I feel like I should still be a Nets fan, but obviously that ship is long gone. I'm not going to be a bandwagoner. So I wasn't necessarily a Nets fan. I grew up like, I loved basketball. We really didn't watch football that much in the house, but eventually I became a Giants fan because my uncle and, like, obviously the proximity. And then eventually also I became a Heat fan because of Dwayne Wade, and I was obsessed with him. And I was like, Marquette, yo, this is my guy. So I was following the Heat for a good amount of time, which wasn't necessarily the bandwagon, because I have family in Miami too, and they're hardcore Heat fans. So
You can claim that.
Yeah, you know, I always had a family connection.
It's a past.
But now with the NBA, I'll tell people, like, I don't have a team because, you know, I covered the Celtics, so I try to be neutral. I just root for good basketball games. I still stand by that because I really haven't found a team where I'm like, I want to be a fan. So for now, basketball-wise, I'm just...
Is there a player in the NBA that you, like, still, you know, attached to or really, like, enjoy watching them play? Because, I mean, that's how I feel about Durant. People get on me. I don't care where Kevin Durant plays basketball. I'm rooting for him. So I'm a little bit of a Nets guy right now just because he's there.
I mean, I guess it'd be cliche to say LeBron, though. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm a LeBron. Like, I love watching him play. But I would say proximity-wise as well, like, following the Celtics, I've grown to admire the way the organization, the history of it, the way the players are now. Yeah. But still, I would never want to be like, oh, I'm a fan, because then people would be like, oh, so like, now you're a fan, whatever. You know, people
just assume, okay, like, come on down.
No. I'm going to stay right here, toeing the line of what, not knowing what I am, really.
That's fine.
So one thing I definitely want to know about is, I mean, you talked about how going to BC and reaching out to the communications director and getting that connection. But for you personally, as you were making your way and really understanding and discovering, like, okay, sports is something that I want to get into and dive into some more. Was there somebody in the field that you were kind of watching and seeing how they were moving and doing things that really caught your attention? Say, that's somebody or someone that I want to strive towards being like, or seeing what they were doing just helped inspire you.
So I feel super corny because I keep using her name every time I talk about this, but definitely Jemele Hill. And the reason why I say her is because, so that same summer when I told the director of communications that I was interested in working in sports, still not knowing what that meant, there was also a conference in Boston, which for me, I was like, it was God's timing, because that was a summer where I was lost, had no idea what my career was going to be. And lo and behold, there's a whole journalism conference in the city that I live in, so I don't have to fly anywhere. I think they had a student discount at the time, so I paid the student fee and was able to attend. And it was the National Association of Black Journalists, which I'm still a member of today. And that was my first experience of seeing other Black journalists. Like, yeah, you see them on TV, but there's definitely a dynamic when you're in person with someone that you've seen do this for a while. And it kind of hits you where, like, oh, this is real. Like, the reality of being one-on-one with someone like that, it kind of sets in, like, okay, I can actually do this, especially as a Black woman in an industry that, historically speaking, hasn't been very welcoming to Black women. So I ended up meeting her at that weekend, and I tell the story, like, there was this whole line. Everybody literally was just trying to take photos because, you know, people trying to get their Instagram likes up. And honestly, I'm all for a good photo. But in that moment, I was so determined. I was like, all right, I see everyone asking for photos. I'm going to ask her for her number, see if she wants to get coffee, and then, like, network that way. And to this day, we never got that actual coffee. But, like, we ran into each other a few times that weekend. We had, like, what I call a heart-to-heart at one point in the bathroom of one of the events. We were just chatting it up, and I was asking her all these questions that I probably wouldn't even ask at coffee. So it ended up working out that way. And, you know, over the years, I wouldn't say like I reach out to her or whatever, you know, I try not to like, you know, overextend and bother people mm-hmm. for the most part. But she's always been a person, like if I see her at the conference, you know, she'll say hi. Like I remember she was talking to someone and she saw me walking by and she like waved. And, you know, people like that, I think in an industry where there are so many people that are full of themselves, so many people have egos, for her to remain humble. And this was right before she became the Jemele Hill that we know. That kind of gave me a level of, this is what I want to be. Like, I don't want to be some too big for, you know, to talk to anyone type of celebrity or whatever people decide, you know, whatever status you're at to label you as, but just being humble, remaining, you know, true to your work, because at the end of the day, people are going to want to see good work. And if you're out here being a diva and you're not even good at what you do, then what's the point of keeping you around? So she's always been like kind of the guiding example for me, like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, she transitioned to not necessarily covering sports as well. So also not limiting yourself to whatever you think is your initial passion, because as much as I love sports, I would have never applied to that job. Actually, your guy, Sherrod, like he's the one who kind of pushed me to apply to that role and say, all right, yeah, I know you love sports, but maybe this is the natural next step mm-hmm. right now for you to grow a little bit more. So, you know, there's been so many people in my corner over the years, but I would say like example wise and one that everyone could reference to, she'd definitely be like one of the people.
That's amazing to even to see that Jemele Hill, who's been referenced on the show a couple times now,
really?
You know, can to extend her hand, because she's someone obviously who's been in your shoes, right? Okay. She's been the one who's up and coming and try to break in. And that's why I really want to talk about is this, you know, being a Black woman in this field, there's not many, right? We can all probably just name a few on the top of our hands. You see the Jemele Hills, you see the Carrie Champion, you see like the Malika Andrew, mm-hmm. and then you really got to start searching. And
yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it's a beautiful thing to see more Black women entering this field, but it's unfortunate we don't see enough of it. You know, right. there's so many stories that can be told from their point of view that we haven't been seeing. And I would love to know, with your experience right now, still, you know, still climbing that ladder.
Yeah.
Have you seen, you know, the tribulations compared to others where it's like, wow, I'm going to have to work 10 times harder to reach where I need to reach at?
I definitely have. And I think the thing about your statement is that people think when you say that, it's like, oh, I'm going to assign her 10 times more work, or I'm going to set the expectation higher. That's not necessarily the case. It's kind of when you go into the job knowing that people are still going to look at you differently, and you having that due diligence to say, all right, I'm going to make sure I know the answer when they ask this question, or I'm going to make sure I know this random stat, when even though a lot of times it is demeaning and it's like, all right, just because you're a girl, I'm going to ask you this, which shouldn't even be the case. But I would say overall, being in Boston specifically, when I was going to college, actually, people already were like, Boston's racist, be careful, right. Protect yourself, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I took it with a grain of salt and made sure to judge Boston based off my own college experience. And I will say it wasn't that bad. There were incidents where I was like, wow, this is actually happening. But I wouldn't kind of write off a whole city, just because when you look at it at its core, every city has its issues. So I wouldn't just, you know, completely write off Boston. But I think media landscape wise, it definitely was frustrating to look on camera and not see myself represented. And I remember when I came out of college, you mentioned counting people on your, I literally like wrote down all the Black people I knew that worked in Boston, and right. That didn't even make a full list. So I think with networking, I've been able to gratefully meet a lot more people, but it's discouraging when you look at a landscape and you're like, wow, I'm not represented. The look that I am, I'm so sorry, there's a train right outside my window, but my look is not the standard of what people think beauty is, for example. And, you know, when you look at the sports media, the way that they kind of strategize planning for shows, a lot of times it's not a Black woman. I think we've progressed to where it's a little more normalized, but it definitely was not always the case. So as I climb this ladder, I think it's going to be a little more normalized. I actually, with Sherrod, shameless plug on our A-List podcast, we had Doris Burke on the last episode, and she actually said that she thinks that this year is the year of the African-American woman. And I think that if she's right, then, you know, we'll finally get the recognition we deserve and people will start to understand that Black women can do stuff as well and can talk about sports and be just as productive as any other person in the industry. But I think it's still taking some time for people to kind of readjust the way that they view sports, the way that they consume sports, and realize that it shouldn't just be limited to maybe white women or white men, but there are so many other people that I think could be involved.
I think the reason Mike and I love doing this show and reason why we are trying to climb this ladder too, especially here in Boston, is Black players and their stories aren't being represented right, especially in Boston. You know, you have a lot of white journalists here who spew a lot of negativity, I feel like, out here. And that we know how players think, you know, sometimes we know what they've gone through in life. And this white journalist who can never experience what that experience. And, you know, if they see a player act up, that's just how he is. And that's just how he acts. And not knowing what he's going through at home or why he's acting the way he acts. And, you know, as Black people, I think it's really important that we are out there representing the real story and the real side of how players are acting. So we love that, you know, what you said about that, and just trying to represent cultures, and that's everywhere, not just in Boston in general.
And I agree with you. I don't know if any player would ever go on the record to say this, but I think there is definitely a level of appreciation when they see someone like them in the locker room that asks a question that is very thoughtful. If someone were to go through all the tape of when maybe a Black woman or a Black man asked a Black player about a specific subject and maybe compare it to when maybe a white counterpart would ask the same question, you will definitely notice the difference. I personally notice the difference when I ask questions, you know, the kind of responses that I get, they're a little more thoughtful or maybe, you know, a little more intentional because they understand where I'm coming from with it. And that's not to say that a white journalist can't necessarily do that. But like you two mentioned, there is definitely a level of appreciation when someone that looks like you can ask the question. And you kind of already have that connection where it's like, all right, I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt because I want to assume that maybe they do have a similar background and can understand where I come from with the answer specifically. Because a lot of times a question can be good, but people can twist the answer and it turns into something that it wasn't originally intended to be.
I want to take it back to a comment you just made about, you know, when you had Doris Burke on your A-List podcast, and you said that she mentioned, you know, she believes it's the year of the Black woman. And, you know, we're seeing now more in sports where you're seeing, you know, the first ever NFL referee being a Black woman, and the Red Sox recently hired somebody in their organization, you know, Black female to run some operations there.
Yep.
And then you always get, like, you know, the team's statement of, oh, we're happy to, you know, push this forward and whatnot, or, you know, it's always a male perspective is what I'm trying to get at. But, and you never hear much of how, you know, the Black females or women in general feel about getting these opportunities. So I want to ask you and get your more thoughts and opinions on seeing more of this happen in the sports world of, you know, referees and, you know, taking leadership positions in different organizations, different things. What is your thoughts and feeling on seeing more of that happening?
I'm here for it. And I think to your point, I want to get to a place in society, I would say, where you're not the only Black woman. Like for Bianca Smith to be one of the first women to be breaking this barrier in MLB, like, yes, that's amazing for her, but it's also unfair to put that burden on her in the same token of like, yeah, so now you're the only Black woman. What do you think about, what do you think every other Black woman thinks, you know? And that's not fair because that's never the case. Like all Black women are different. All Black women come from different backgrounds and experiences. Yeah, we have the core of being Black and being maybe looked differently in certain parts of society, but at our core, we're still, clearly she was qualified enough for the job that she was hired. So I could understand the frustration a lot of times when women of her caliber get in roles and they're interviewed and it's like, all right, how does it feel to be the first woman or first Black woman to do this? And I'm not speaking for her because I don't know her specifically, but a lot of times I've seen where women don't want to talk about being the first or the only because it kind of, in a way, degrades the role that they got. It's like, all right, were you good enough to do this without being a Black woman? I feel like it's a little complicated sometimes where it feels like that's what everyone wants to talk about. And it's like, okay, what is she going to do for the job? Like, how is she going to scout for this team? Like, what are her qualifications? How will she make the team better as a result of being there, period? Not just because she's a Black woman. But at the same time, I do still feel like we should celebrate these accomplishments, because that hopefully shows that we are slowly getting to the point of progress. But it's complicated because, again, you don't want her to be the token and only the only representative of Black women, period, people, period. So it's tricky, but I'm so happy for the fact that we are seeing a little more progress overall, I think.
I think is right. I mean, there's such a fine line, right, where you are maybe that the first Black person or Black woman in there, and now you have to question yourself saying, did I get this job due to that they're trying to fulfill some type of quota?
Did I really deserve it?
And then once you're in that position, you know, you got to excel as much as you can. Like, you just look in, I know we keep bringing up sports, but if you look at sports coaching jobs and such, seems like, sure, they'll give, you know, a opportunity to a Black coach.
Right.
But that leash will be a lot shorter compared to a white coach. Or if you see, even right now, there's a lot of qualified coaches around, and Steve Nash got the job just like that. Not saying Steve Nash is not doing a hell of a job with the Brooklyn Nets, but where's that opportunity for others? And once you get that opportunity, how sustainable is it?
That's true.
It's definitely difficult. And that's what we have to fight for still in 2021. One thing I wanted to bring up, especially since you're in that field, and it's back to the thin line of speaking on things that are happening to Black people while still being professional and having a job when you have to talk sports. And now currently you're doing news. So, you know, summertime, we all know, you know, it was a huge eruption with Black Lives Matter. We had the George Floyd, we had Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and, you know, a lot's going on right there. But yet, you know, basketball's coming back up and football preseason starting up, and a lot of things are going on in the world as well. Do you feel like, as Black people, especially a woman of color, that it's our responsibility to touch on those topics as well that's going on outside of the sports world and what's going on in politics, and speaking up on what's happening on Black Lives Matter? Is it our responsibility to do that? Is it our responsibility to talk to the higher ups to bring this up? How do we manage that?
It's tricky because, kind of going to the previous point I made, you don't want the Black people to only speak on behalf of Black people, but at the same time, I feel like there is a level of when people may not be able to educate themselves in the proper ways, where maybe you do have to educate them and maybe kind of give them some insight as to what you've dealt with so that they can better understand what exactly what we mean when we talk about racism or unconscious bias or whatever the case may be. So I don't think Black people should be the spokesperson. I think that people that are not minorities or marginalized should do a little more research and try to understand what exactly why are people so compelled to protest for something? If I can't understand it, why does it mean so much to them that they're willing to march the streets and willing to change their profile photos and do all of these social media or in real life type activism things, versus just sitting there and not willing to contribute to society and understand that there is an issue when it comes to racism? But again, in that same token, it shouldn't fall on the people that are being marginalized, because at the end of the day, they can't really change as much when the people that have set up these systems, whether they want to admit it or not, historically the systems were set up for them. They need to be willing to face that privilege that they have and say, okay, as much as I love this comfort of having, you know, generational wealth or whatever the case may be, I need to look back and reflect and say, okay, maybe there's some way I can help. Whether that, you know, I know reparations is probably completely out the window at this point, but how can you help change, you know, moving forward so that we're not consistently in this cycle of Black people feeling as though they're oppressed or being oppressed, really?
You're preaching right now.
It's facts.
You're preaching right now. It's crazy, but I definitely wanted to ask about your podcast, the A-List podcast with A. Sherrod Blakely, because when he was on here, he just talked about how much he knew once he had the opportunity to be start that podcast or get it going, he wanted you. He said he specifically wanted you on there with him. And you know, Sherrod's been in this game for a long time. He spoke about it. He's such an OG.
Yeah.
He's been for a while. So I know having an opportunity to do a podcast with him has been great. So I just want to ask about that opportunity, how it came to be. I mean, we spoke about it a little bit with him, but I want to hear from your perspective, how did it come to be and just what has it been like working with him?
First of all, he said something nice about me. That's great. I need to get that little clip for myself. No, but seriously, he actually called me when he was thinking about launching it. And he, to your point, was very intentional about making sure that the co-host was either a woman or a person of color, whatever the case may be, specifically because of the market that I mentioned in Boston and the landscape of what you look like, what you're supposed to look like working and living in a city like this. So he was definitely very intentional about making sure that, you know, whoever, if it wasn't me, it was going to be, I think, either a woman or a person of color overall. But it's been a really cool ride. Like, we've worked together at NBC Sports Boston for, you know, the 4 years that I was there. He was there way before me. And it's definitely a different thing when you're trying to transition from knowing someone. Like, I'm sure, you know, you talk to a friend, it's different. But when you're translating that to a podcast, yeah, it's definitely, there's definitely a level of trying to reacquaint yourself with someone on a digital level. And obviously we can't record a person, so that's mostly through websites and Zoom, whatever the case may be. So it was a transition in that sense, but overall it's been a really cool experience. I've been able to meet so many more people through our podcast because he usually, you know, with the OG status, he puts all these cool guests like Doris Burke, yeah, and I'm able to meet them as a result. But it's just been a really cool opportunity to kind of still stay in sports, but also learn a little bit more about the game. And as I mentioned, meet a little more people as a result too.
That's dope. And so give us a quick plug in on where we can find the podcast and that episode with Doris Burke.
Yes. So it's on YouTube. It's under the CLNS Media Network. So it's on YouTube. You can, if you search the A-List podcast and you actually, if you search my name in podcast.
Okay, talk your thing.
Right. Let them know. Bright lights and everything. It's up there.
The only reason I say that though is because my name's so unique that like my name is in the title of the podcast, Kwani. So it's like the A-List podcast with A. Sherrod Blakely and Kwani Ilunis. Super wordy. But if you search either of our names, you're going to find it automatically because our names are unique. So that's why I said that. I wasn't trying to, you know, gas myself. Okay. But if you search A-List podcast, you'll find it on any platform that you prefer, audio-wise or video.
Is there a backstory to your name or, you know, nationality, all that? You could add all of that in there as well. You know, we're all curious. People listening to watch.
Oh, my God. Okay, so my name, it's funny because I was pressing my mom about this for years. And I was like, where did you get my name from? And she kept saying a book. So in my head, you know those little baby name books with like the meaning next to it? So I just assumed she got one of those books and like picked my name out of the lineup. So all these years I'm looking, I'm like, I can't find this book. I can't find my name online. And I'm pretty good at searching the internet and I could not find my name. So fast forward to working at NBC Sports Boston. Shout out to Maria because I talked to she was the office administrator at the time. And I told her this story, as I just told you. I was like, my mom said she got my name out of a book. And she was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I think maybe the next day, she comes to my desk with a printout Amazon review of a book. And it was an actual novel. And the main character's name was Kwani. And she was like, is this what your mom found? And I sent it to my mom. I was like, is this the book? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, so all these years you couldn't remember, I had to have one of my coworkers find it. But the name of the book was like She Who Remembers, I think. And like the main character's name is Kwani and she has this whole like adventure and all of that. So that's where my name actually came from. My dad named my middle name Abigail. It's her father's joy, or she brings her father joy. It's from the Bible. So my mom picked my first name. My dad picked my middle name and my last name, I guess, as well.
Unique story. I mean, I wish I had a unique story. My older brother gave my parents my name. So
that's crazy. So cool that he got to pick.
He was like 7 years old and he just said, hey, just name him Michael. And they just said, sure, that works. So
that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure on a 7-year-old.
Seriously, Mark, what's your name?
So, with my name, it's an argument between my parents every time. Mm-hmm. So my pops says I was named after Marvelous Marvin Hagler. He was the boxer up in Cambridge up here. You know, my dad's a huge boxing guy, so okay. he loved that name. They wanted to give me an American name, and then my mom, she would always say it was because of Marvin Gaye. So, you know, every time I asked, it was because of Marvin Gaye. No, it was because of Marvin Hagler. The funny thing is, if you know me, I love sports and I love R&B. So it worked out anyways. I got the best of both.
Right. Look at that.
Go ahead, Mike.
All right. Like we talked about in the beginning of the show, you know, Women's History Month. Flowers, giving out flowers. We've been doing it all month long. You know, Marv's giving out flowers. I've given out flowers. Shout out to Sherrod, who gave out flowers as well. You are a special guest. We definitely have to ask you that same question. Doesn't matter if it's past, present, you know, no longer with us or still alive. One person, many people, it doesn't matter. Flowers are being given out, and we want you to definitely have the floor to give out flowers where they are due.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to obviously start with my mom because she was the core of me becoming the woman that I am today. Obviously, my dad, but he is not Men's Month right now. It's Women's Month. My mom, I think, would be the first woman that comes to mind because when I think about my story, and then when I start to fast forward throughout my career, there's so many women. The woman I mentioned to you guys that got me that WDEI internship, Steph Tanera, still try to keep in contact with her. She actually still works with BC Athletics. So every once in a while, she'll be like, I have a women's basketball player I want you to talk to. She's thinking about being in media or broadcasting. And like, I try to thank her and she's like, no, that was all like, people that are in your corner really don't understand how much they make a difference in your life. She was definitely one of them. When I worked at WBZ out of college, I would say Jackie Connolly, she's literally what I say the sports department head at this point. I don't know if that's her formal title, but she ran that department. Only woman to do so in that. It was just a bunch of guys there. She was just always a person I could go to for advice. She'd look at my reels. You know, she was the person that sent me to a Patriots practice and said, hey, get some sound. And I'm sitting here like fresh out of college, like, you want me to go to a Patriots locker room and interview someone? Great, that's going to turn out well. It wasn't that bad, but it was still intimidating at the beginning. So for her to, you know, really believe in me, invest in me at that time. Andrea Natal, she was also at WBZ. She also watched my reels, but she was on the news side. So she would give me like more practical TV news advice. And she's the one who called me when NBC Sports Boston had that production assistant opening. And I always say, like, to this day, I was in church. Literally, I remember I was in the hallway back home in Jersey because I still hadn't found a job yet. And I remember she called me. I don't remember why I was near the bathroom, but thankfully I was because I entered, like, in the church bathroom, like, what's up? And she tells me, like, you need to apply for this job today. Like, they have this opening. You have to do it. So shout out to her. There have been so many women along the way, but those are the few that stand out right now just because of the role that they played in my career, which they may not have realized it, but just to have that unwavering support throughout the few years that I've been in the industry has definitely been something I'm going to always remember with me. And, you know, if I write a book one day, they're going to be in the book too.
That's beautiful. You know, especially thanking people who, even though they think it's minuscule, you know, that brought you to the right path, and that's gotten you here. So shout out to all the women you mentioned on Women's History Month.
Yes, indeed.
We love it. We love to hear these type of stories that unfortunately don't get told enough.
Right.
And so thank you, Kwani, for that. But you know, Kwani, you are a sports head. This is what you do. You fell in love with sports, specifically in college and moving on up. You've been watching the Celtics, the Patriots, and all Boston sports now for a while. Now while we are recording, we just ended the All-Star weekend. You know, Celtics have come off a 4-game winning streak. They've been struggling throughout this season. I think we all understand the Celtics have been struggling. So Kwani, what do you believe, first of all, let's ask, do you believe the Celtics can turn their season around?
Absolutely. I'm never going to count a team out because
it's okay if you do.
No, I know, but it's not even like a PR answer because I technically don't even work for the company that they were partners with. But I really do think they can turn things around. And like you mentioned, that 4-game win streak right before the All-Star break, I think they really start to build that momentum and kind of start clicking. And I think people underestimate, like, an NBA season's long, and then you add a pandemic, you add all of the mental health aspects of what people have been going through. Everyone's dealt with a lot in the last year. So for them to be counted out just because of that first half, if they were to not perform to the second half, I wouldn't, you know, be surprised. But at the same time, I don't see that they couldn't step up and really kind of elevate their game. The first game back is going to be the Brooklyn Nets. And I think if you know anything about the Celtics, they're always going to play up to their opponents. So that game, I think, is going to be a really good one. And if they can just build off of that momentum and continue for the second half of the season, I think they'll be fine. I think, you know, you have these injuries. You have Marcus Smart being out. You had Kemba being out for a while. Like, there's so many adjustments that had to be made during this season. So if they can at least prove, you know, with the second stretch that they're finding their momentum and figuring out a way to work and gel together, I'm not going to count them out. I will have to see a little more to be really convinced that they're just going to throw this.
Your optimism is
Mike is shaking his
optimism is amazing. But
it's only because of that 4-game win streak. It's because they came off of, they're coming off of that. They're going to come off a little bit of rest. They can regroup. If it wasn't for that 4-game win streak, I don't think I'd be like, oh, there's optimism. That's when they started turning around. I was like, okay, maybe there's hope here.
Marcus Smart's going to be coming back. Well, the Indians could possibly make some moves. I don't know.
Is she talking you back in, Mike?
It's I'm not completely there yet.
Not sold yet.
But I'm getting there. I'm getting. What I really want to know is, okay, because you're from New Jersey, and that's little New York or New Jersey, little. Yes. So you've been in Boston for a while now, so you're fully immersed in the sports scene. You know what it feels like in this city of champs.
Yeah.
What has it been like for you being in city? How many championships? You know, Marv, we lose count up here sometimes.
You know, just a little bit.
See, I think the Red Sox have gotten one. The Patriots maybe gotten two or three. The Celtics have been a solid team. Bruins have been solid. But what is it?
Close to one, yeah.
Yep. What has it been like for you being in the city, seeing the championships and the culture, knowing that we're used to winning up here? We don't know anything else but winning. What has it been like for you?
It spoiled me because, like you said, coming from the New York, New Jersey area, I don't think that was on the forefront of anyone's mind because there's so much to do in that area. Like, we're not just limited to sports. We have, and I'm not saying Boston's limited.
I got kind of hot when she
gets some shots there real quick.
Okay. Let me finish and then you'll understand. So what I'm saying is, I realized as I said that, like, that was not good. But in, you know, the New York, New Jersey, there's like arts, there's Broadway. There, you know, you go to Times Square and there's just so much to do. Like, there's just so much going on. And transitioning to Boston, I feel like the culture for sports has already been so solidified in the city where that's what you expect. Like you said, the Patriots have been winning. We're winning for, at least, you know, 20 years until Tom Brady left. But that's just the norm, you know? And so for me to come here and realize, like, sports really is life in the city. Ball is life, as we love to say. That was a transition. And then for me, I mentioned being spoiled because I think about all of my friends that we all graduated at the same time. We all ended up in different cities working, you know, in media in some capacity. And I was privileged to work in the city, especially being a sport, you know, in the sports world, right, where you're not covering losing teams. Like, that's a privilege. Yeah. Like, the fact that it took Tom Brady's last season and I was in the locker room for his last game right before he ended up leaving. And I remember, like, this was the first time I had covered a not losing team, but that season was basically a loss. But that was the first time I had been in a locker room where, like, people were sad and, like, didn't want to answer questions and weren't in a cheery mood. And that was weird to me. And so I don't know if that was to my benefit to not have covered losing teams, because I think there's definitely a strength when you can talk to a player that just lost 10 games in a row and still be able to ask good questions. I definitely need that challenge. But at the same time, I feel like being here has kind of elevated my standards of what greatness is. And to see it on a consistent basis, I think whatever job you're in, whatever career you decide to pursue, you're going to be like, wow, well, wouldn't you want to strive to be the greatest because you've seen it so prominently in the city in every single sports team, essentially.
Yeah, we're definitely spoiled here. I can speak in for myself. I know this. There's been losses that we had, and I'm a baby of this. I'm mad. It ruins my whole day. Sometimes I go to bed early. I can't deal with losses. Can't do it, especially with when it comes to the Patriots. And now with you had to mention it, Tom Brady leaving us and departing. How do you feel? Do you feel an awkwardness with Brady winning right now in Tampa Bay and New England just being in this flux right now? Do you sense an awkwardness going on?
No, I think, you know, with Tom Brady, I feel like for his career, he did what was best for him. And it got to a point, and I'm trying not to make this too personal, but he got to a point where he realized that he wasn't getting what he needed from the organization that he was working at. He wasn't being supported in the way that he wasn't. And quite frankly, after proving himself for so long, he still, it seemed, you know, from the external that he still wasn't valued. And I know that's, you know, someone could say like, oh, that's BS. Like he got all these rings. Everyone knows he's the greatest. Yes, that may be the case. But at the same time, like, there are a lot of times where you can be the greatest and they still not want to pay you. And I think you have the capacity to be willing to walk away, and no one should be able to judge you for that because you know your worth. And I think that's what Tom Brady did. He went somewhere where, you know, they may have been struggling, obviously, you know, on the offensive end and needed someone like him to really wrangle up that team and to be successful. But he also knew what he was bringing to the table. He was bringing all of this experience. He was bringing, you know, he technically brought Gronk with him and AB when you really think about it. He was able to bring a lot of assets to that team and was able to be a success as a result of it. The most recent example I can think of was Shonda Rhimes. She was with ABC writing all of these shows. And at one point, I recently read the story. So she asked them for some tickets to go to Disney World. And I think maybe, let's say the capacity was 3 for each employee. And maybe she asked for, I think, 1 extra one. And so she asked them for these tickets. They say no, like they're not able to do it. And mind you, it sounds like, you know, even if she was being big time, like you can't give her 1 extra ticket, like, you know, 1 ticket to go to. I doubt that, you know, this would have broke the bank. But that situation happens. And then she goes to Netflix, sells them Bridgerton in addition to all of the other media, you know, content that she's going to, I think, eventually put out. And Bridgerton ends up being the most watched show on Netflix within the time span that Netflix put out for that stat. And it goes to show that a lot of times people aren't going to value you in the role, even though you proved yourself. Like, she has had all of these successful shows, and yet people are still like, yeah, but we don't want to pay you. We don't want to give you an extra Disney ticket. And I admire people that are willing to take a risk on themselves when it gets to a point where you realize that you aren't being valued and you take that leap. And it ends up paying off. And that's what happened with Shonda Rhimes. And obviously that's what happened with Tom Brady, to have a historical season, turn around a franchise in one season. And like you said, go to a Super Bowl. I don't think it's awkward. I think he did what was best for him. And I admire that he was able to really risk it all and bet on himself, because clearly it paid off in a way that no one would have ever imagined.
As much as a Tom Brady fan that I am, you know, I feel like I'm one of few who are like, you know what? I understand why he left. Of course, I wish he retired a Patriot and whatnot. But like, everything you just explained in the great comparison you just made, I understand it now, especially thanks to your explanation. And I understood it then when it happened. I mean, it hurt. The pain was still there. But like, I understood it, because everything you said about not feeling truly appreciated is true. Because if you see, it seemed as if he went to Tampa Bay and they gave that guy whatever he wanted.
Everything.
You want AB, you want Gronk.
You want wide receivers, you want running backs.
Whatever you want.
Tight ends, we can do everything.
And Brady said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And being the greatest of all time that he is, I'm going to show you what winning's all about. And they just made it a match made in heaven for them. So it's just how it unfolded. But we got another segment coming up that It's gonna get real hot, real spicy, a little spicy, nothing too crazy. But before we get to that, I do need to know, because you're doing a lot of great things. You know, you're out there, you're staying busy. But are there any other goals in life that you want to reach, or within the industry or in your personal, or whatever it is, what else does Kwani want to happen as she continues to press forward in life?
So funny. I was literally thinking about this today because I watched the Oprah interview with Meghan and Harry, and you know, all, you know, when you're in media, obviously, like, Oprah is one of those people like, oh, you should try to be like Oprah. And so I'm not going to say I'm going to be Oprah or want to be like Oprah. That definitely is a goal that would be very lofty. But with that being said, I wouldn't, one, count myself out. But two, the best comparison I could think of was, and it's going to sound weird, but if Oprah and David Letterman were to have a child, I want to be what that child would be. Like, I just admire both of their careers and the way that they are able to talk to people and really get a good story without doing the most. Like, a lot of interviewers will just, you know, maybe ask too broad of a question or not ask the right question or listen to the answers and give a good follow-up so that you can give a good story. I think the two of them have mastered what the art of interviewing is, at least from my perspective. And if I could maybe get to a point in my career where I could do that, then I think that'd be like the dream type job.
That's dope. I heard Stephen A say something really similar, which is surprising. You know, Stephen A is the top of the top when it comes to sports. Yeah. And he was saying how, you know, his goal is to do late night TV, to be like a host of late night TV.
And wow, I would watch that.
Yeah, I definitely, because I feel like, you know, when you do sports, and he really got me thinking that as well, when you do sports, sometimes they want to put you in a box.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, especially if you're a person of color. Okay, this is a person of sport. This is all they can do, and they're limited to just that. Where there's so much more. There's so much more to our personality. There's so much more that we can do. So exactly. I love that you said that. Thank you.
Thank you. I had me like wheelchair.
Well, can drink that water because it's about to get hot.
Might want to keep the cap off just in case.
I'm nervous now. What is about to happen?
Woo. Set it up, Marv. Set it up.
So we like to end off these shows with putting our guests in the hot seat.
Oh, Lord.
So okay. the hot seat is simple. It's just we give out rapid questions and we ask for rapid answers. Nothing crazy. Nothing.
Okay, that's not bad.
You can handle it. You can handle it.
I did that on another podcast. That's fine.
Okay. So She's ready.
I'm a pro.
All right. So the first question is, celebrity crush growing up.
Oh, growing up. I guess the closest would be Dwayne Wade, because I wasn't really big on celebrity crushes, but like I said, I definitely followed the heat because of him. So
it was Dwayne Wade. It's okay.
I'm in denial, clearly.
Let's see. Favorite restaurant in the city?
Oh, that's a hard one because I like, there's so many good spots. In Boston proper?
Whatever you want.
I'm just on you. Crap.
I know there's so many for sure.
I'm gonna say this is gonna sound so bad because I just interviewed their owner, but I'm gonna say Mita because their food is so bomb, and I don't want to seem biased, but I've been there before, and the food is Italian food, but the Black-owned restaurant. If you haven't gone there, you should check it out.
Wow.
I'm going to say Mita. Yeah, let's do that.
Need a pen or something.
Yeah, well, write this down, bro. Write this down for us.
M-I-D-A. Y'all got to go.
Okay. Good to know.
And also, I know, you know, we're going to stick to food. I know you are. I know you're Haitian. So, favorite dish?
Why are these questions so complicated? I can't pick a favorite.
pick one. Hot seat.
I'm going to do, so our like black rice with some griot, like pork.
Of course, griot. I need some griot.
And then some legume. Like, I'm just going to make myself a little meal. And legume is like, for those who don't know, it's like spinach, but like a bunch of vegetables. I don't know how to make it sound delicious, but it actually is really
good. It smacks. It's so good.
All right. Favorite TV show that you binge watched during the quarantine?
I got to go with The Office. I'm so basic, but like, I'll just go back and watch episodes because I don't know what else to watch.
Yes. So. Me too. I love it.
So let's dive in. Favorite Office episode.
Ooh.
Oh, come on. Well,
we got to go there.
Someone else, Mike, go first.
Yeah, Mike, what's your favorite?
My favorite episode is it's from the first season. It's when dude put the pita bread in the toaster and almost set the office on fire. Oh, and then this God. Dude, Dwight, started singing, Ryan started the fire.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love that. I just love the song.
There's so many good
episodes. There's a lot. I know Marv's favorite episode already.
Oh, do you? I want to hear that.
Which Marv, hold on. Which one do you think it is?
The fire episode.
Have two.
When Dwight was setting up the fire alarm.
Oh, when he locked the alarm.
The fire alarm is the funniest scene on TV ever. Then when he throws the cat onto the roof, and the cat goes
up. Right back down.
Oh, man.
But my so other favorite scene is, yeah. is Kev. It's Kev. Kev with the pot of
When you said scene, I was like, if I had to pick a favorite scene, that has to be so tragic. And he tries to scoop it back in. Like you're not eating that.
No. Oh, man.
So episodes for me, I'm torn between is it dinner party when Mike has him over at his house? And he's like showing off the little TV in the corner, like it's between that one and then when Mike also offers these kids this full scholarship to college and tells them,
"Oh yes,
the second hand embarrassment."
When they made a whole song for him and everything when he showed up,
Mike, why? Why are you promising these kids much?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
There's so many good ones, though. Do you guys ever try to watch the British one? I don't think it's funny at all.
I never tried.
I didn't get into it. It's definitely a different kind of humor.
Doesn't The Office stem from that show? Wasn't it created?
It does. But I think maybe just because they made it cater to the American audience, it got funny for us. Yeah. But that one was not funny at all. I tried a whole episode and it was like, I wasn't even paying attention by the end.
Yeah, I couldn't. That's a good one, Mike.
Go ahead, Marv.
I said office episode. Yeah. Let's back to you.
Let's see. If you could have any dessert right now, what would it be?
Dang. Maybe like a churro, but with like ice cream on the side. So like ice cream wise, I would want some kind of chocolate espresso type ice cream mix.
Churros are good. A good churro.
Churros are good.
Freshly made. Oh, man.
Yes, it got to be hot. It can't be cold.
It's got to be fresh churro. I feel that.
If I were to look at your playlist right now, what top three artists would come up most?
So for me, it would definitely be. I don't know what artists necessarily would come up, but my playlist is like a combination of gospel and hip hop. So, and it's not like I have the Kirk Franklins in there, but it's more like newer artists as well, like Travis Green or Tasha Cobbs. I don't know if y'all know who that is. But then, you know, I always got like sprinkle in my Drake and my other ratchet music as well to just kind of balance everything out. Well, it's about balance.
It's about balance.
Ratchetness.
It makes an interesting car ride.
Quick follow-up question with that gospel aspect of your playlist. How did you feel about Kanye's Sunday Services and those albums that came out that he dropped with that choir?
So I actually love the Sunday Service, and hopefully I don't get canceled for this, but I thought that, you know, when you take his musical genius, even though he calls himself, we can call him a genius. I don't know if we should be calling him a genius. But when you take that aspect and you're able to kind of put it together with gospel music, I just think it's a beautiful thing. And those songs, most of the songs I had known growing up in the church. Yeah. So for him to kind of revamp it, but also add that like vocal, that high level of vocals and thought behind the production, I really appreciated it. And I know that people, you know, question his mental health status and all of that. But at the end of the day, for me, from my perspective, I feel like, you know, God's still able to use something like that, whether, you know, whatever his intentions were, he's able to use that music in a way that can touch others. And I definitely thought that the music was good. And something it was definitely one of the albums that I was listening to for a while.
Agreed. All right. This is my last question.
If you haven't heard that album, you go ahead. But if you haven't heard that album, people, that album gives you life.
It does. Really,
that Sunday choir gives you life. So definitely check it out.
It's great. All right, this is my final question. I think we've been asking this question all the time, and it always gets people kind of, oh, I don't know.
Okay.
If you could have dinner reservations, you got yourself and four other available seats. Oh. Anybody in, do we do sports history? Anybody in history? Anybody that you want. History, dead actually, doesn't say dead or alive, doesn't matter. You can invite four other guests,
four people,
to that dinner. Who would they be?
I thought you were going to say one, so I was already kind of nervous about that one. But four gives me a little more leeway.
Yeah, let you work a little bit.
So definitely going to put Michael Jordan on there just because. David Letterman, because I also mentioned him. I want to put Oprah, but then, like, will that – who else would I want on my list? Ooh, Beyonce. Let's put Beyonce on there. And then, you know what? I'm going to just put Jesus in there, too, because I want to hear his perspective.
Why not?
That's an amazing
all-star lineup.
Your guests are going to be thanking you for being at this table.
Just being at the table, we don't have to even have a conversation. We're just here.
Oh my god!
Last question of the night. Okay. Last question of the night, Quadi. You've been here. You've been hanging with us for the past hour here at Double
LLI. Time flew by.
Time flies with good conversation. It's great.
So this is definitely won't be the last time you come on the show. But question is, who would you like to see on Double M Live?
Oh,
and you got to try to help us get this person.
Oh.
So it can't be Oprah.
Wait, who was Sherrod's answer?
Sherrod answered. At first, he tried to say you. He tried to say you. Oh, okay. And then it was Cedric Maxwell.
Yes.
Okay, that's easy-ish get if he's not busy. He's still, you know, big time, but he'll do that. That's a good one. They have to be in Boston. They have to be in sports. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Who would you like to see us hang out with for an hour? We versatile.
Sports. I think he's doing Boston sports. Maybe talk to Abby Chin.
Okay.
That's a good one.
I can help y'all with that.
Y'all can help with? Okay. I like that.
I have to. I mean, clearly I'm not. No, but she'd be great. She'd be good.
No, she'd be awesome. She'd definitely be awesome. Kwani, wow, an hour really passed.
Thank you.
This was super dope. Super dope. Any last words you want to say to the people?
No, I want to thank you guys for having me on. This was fun. I'm usually the one asking questions, so when the tables turn, it challenges me a little bit, but this was good.
Well, you see it at the bottom there. Make sure you follow Kwani.
Yes.
IG, Twitter. She's out there. She's doing her thing. She's great. She's blessing the industry. And like Marv said, we are greatly appreciative of her time here on Double M Live.
Yeah, we've been giving out flowers. We give this virtual flowers
to you,
Quadi.
We're so corny for that.
Hey, the style, you got to live right now. This is how it is right now.
Pandemic times. But we look forward to seeing where you are next in your next chapter, continuing to grow. And we can't wait to have you back here again. Thank you, Kwani.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Yes, this is Double M Live, episode 76. Mike Nice, Marv, Kwani, and we are out.